Time to find out the week's Spanish news. Let's catch up with Simon Hunter at El País. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Good, mate. Now, you post on Facebook quite a lot, and I often regard working El País as a kind of hive of frantic activity with hundreds of very trained journalists around. But you posted a picture of yourself on a table which looks like it seats about 50, and you're the only one on it. What have you done to people there?
Well, we've got a new editor. We've got a new team of directors, deputy editors at El País. So naturally, the first thing they do is move everyone around. I have been in so many different places in that newsroom, I cannot tell you. So what happened yesterday was they started doing the move. And all of a sudden, going from this bustling table of full of journalists, I was left completely on my own.
Bless you.
But then I got moved to the gente section, which is basically the gossip section.
Nice.
And it is impossible to concentrate when you work near these ladies. They're lovely, lovely ladies, but they're constantly talking about Kanye West is doing this, and
it's like being live in an episode of Loose Women, but in Spanish, I guess.
Exactly, and it's impossible to tune out. Until this week, we were sitting next to the people that do the graphs and the graphics and all that kind of stuff, which is definitely very tune-outable. It's easy to ignore what they're saying. But trying not to listen to the gente women is very hard.
Love it. Okay, so the news for this week, international tourist arrivals slowing down in Spain. And that doesn't mean in their speed on the roads, does it?
No, definitely not. But this isn't anything to panic about, because really what we're looking at is that last year we just had this, you know, completely record year.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, last year was like the all-time high for foreign visitors, which was 10.5 million. We've only gone across that 10 million threshold three times in recent history. Right. That was 10.5 million for a month, and that was twice in the month of August last year, and once in July. So what we're looking at now is a bit of a slowdown, but it's kind of, you know, it's sort of normal because we're comparing it to this massive record last year. So the figures are, we had 9.98 million foreign visits in the month of July.
Okay.
That's 4.9% down on the same period of last year. And the reason being that the key markets are sending fewer visitors. So the number of British tourists fell by 5.6%.
Really?
The number of visitors from France went down 11.4% and 6.2% from Germany. So there's a number of reasons for this. Partly is because, you know, they had such a good summer in the UK. The need to go abroad was a bit reduced. And also some of the alternatives, such as Tunisia and Turkey, they have suffered in recent years because of either terrorist attacks or regional instability.
Yeah.
But they are recovering. So, and also we've got the case that the Turkish currency, the lira, depreciated recently. So that's made the country more attractive to foreign tourists. And of course, we've got, you know, in terms of British tourism, we've got the weakness of the pound at the moment, which is making Spain more expensive to visit. So it's nothing. I don't think it's anything to worry about too much. Also, interestingly, the tourism minister this week has said that the government is focusing on a strategy. We've got the new Socialist Party government, of course, and she has said that the government is focusing on a strategy based on quality and diversification in order to avoid overcrowding. You and I have spoken about the problems that cities such as Barcelona have been having, and the kind of anti-tourist sentiment, and also this problem about the tourist rentals through sites such as Airbnb.
Yeah.
And lots of regional and local authorities are starting to do things to crack down on this kind of thing. Also, the issue of the cruise ships has been a problem, particularly, you know, acute in Barcelona, where these big cruise ships come along and disgorge all these, you know, hundreds of thousands of passengers who don't necessarily spend anything, but really kind of overcrowd the city. So it's interesting to see that the new government is talking about tackling that problem. In terms of the favourite tourist destinations in July, the Balearic Islands are still top the list. They took nearly 25% of all foreign tourists in Spain. And then Catalonia comes second with 24%. Yep. Followed by Andalusia with 13%. Arrivals did fall, however, in all those three regions. But the Madrid region, this is interesting, experienced the opposite trend, had a 6.7% rise in foreign tourists in July. Tourists who did come spent fewer days in Spain compared with other years, and the average stay in July was 4 to 7 nights. So let's see what the wow. total is for the year. I think we can expect, you know, from the look of these figures, we can expect that it will be down on this year on last year, of course. But that was, I think, for a number of reasons, because last year was such an exceptional year.
I mean, taking a kind of straw poll of myself, which is not that big a poll, certainly in the Costa del Sol, I thought the traffic was worse this year and there were more people on the roads. But I guess if it wasn't the holidaymakers, it's your lot from Madrid that were causing all that, Lynn.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it could be more domestic visits, but fewer visits from abroad, definitely.
Interesting. Okay, now this is a biggie. Spain's foreign affairs minister is not ruling out, which is not the same as ruling in, a time zone change.
Exactly. Yeah. So this story is really interesting for a number of reasons. First of all, the European Commission has come up with this proposal that it's going to bring an end to the twice yearly changing of the clocks across the continent. Mm. It's particularly interesting because this was on the basis of a poll that the European Commission put out there online. In basically, you know, anyone could vote on this as to, you know, whether do we still want the clocks to change or have we, you know, we're done with that, basically. Mm. The poll is interesting because it got the highest response of any poll of this kind that the European Commission has run before. I mean, it's still, you know, comparatively, it's still like a minuscule proportion. It's like 1%, or less than 1% of the population of the EU countries, the 28 EU countries, took part. Right. But it's still, that's still a significant number of people. It was mostly people from Germany responded. It was, you know, only a very small response from Spain, but it's a really interesting idea. And of course, it brings up this sort of age old debate about whether Spain should be on GMT, or at least in line with Portugal, the Canary Islands, and the UK, because technically Spain is not on the correct time zone in terms of its geographical location. And this is supposedly supposed to date from the time of the Second World War, and Franco is supposed to have pulled Spain out of GMT in 1940 as a gesture of goodwill to Nazi Germany. But then since then we've stayed on this time zone, and that is why, you know, in Spain we do have these incredibly, you know, late light nights in the summer. Mm. But of course this causes quite a lot of problems, not least for people who live in Galicia. If you think about the geographical location of Galicia, it's in the northwest of Spain, and it's actually just above Portugal. So farmers in Galicia, for example, or forest rangers, or anyone who works in the country, they have, you know, real problems kind of coordinating with the rest of Spain, because they are, you know, technically kind of really out of sync with the rest of the country when it comes to the hours. And for we ran a feature last week about farmers who, you know, this farmer supplies lots of restaurants across Spain, but of course they're ringing him up to give him orders when, you know, they're still working in the fields, or when they're, you know, it's too early in the morning, and it kind of causes a lot of problems. The really interesting thing is going to be exactly if this does happen, if the EC does, you know, end up passing this, and of course all that the member states are going to have to agree, so it's by no means a done deal. The question is, what do we keep? Do we keep the summer timetable, or do we keep the winter timetable? And if we keep the summer timetable, the difference would be in Spain, in the winter, you wouldn't have the sunrise until between 9 a.m. and 9:30 p.m. 9 a.m. and 9:30 a.m., which would be very, very late. And then it would get dark between 6:30 and 7 o'clock. So that would obviously be quite a big change. Mm-hmm. And then if we keep the winter timetable or the year round, the difference would be in the summer we'd have a sunriser between 5:30 a.m. and 6 a.m. which is a lot like that's a lot like the UK if you think about it. I mean, whenever I'm over in, you know, it's staying at my parents in the UK in the summer, it always amazes me like how early the sun comes up.
Well, you can't see it anyway because it's always cloudy.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. Well, on the few days of sun, and then in the evening time, it would get dark between 8:30 and 9 p.m. And that would be the big difference, obviously, you know, in the summers. It would be, from experience, I could tell you, it would be a lot easier to get the children to bed at a decent time, because my son, who's only 3 and a half, you know, since last summer, we've been saying, come to bed. And he's like, but it's daytime, Oh, and he's right, it is still daytime until 10 o'clock. So it would cause, if we did do this in Spain, it would cause quite a cultural shift, because, you know, a lot of the things that people really love about Spain, you know, the late nights, you know, out in the cool, you know, cool evening air, that would be quite considerably changed. So it'd be really interesting to see if work timetables ended up getting changed and we didn't have this really long work day that we've got at the moment with the 2-hour lunch break and that kind of thing of people finishing at 7 or 8 o'clock at night. So watch this space. Let's see what the EC comes up with and see where we end up.
So are Spain bound to follow the EC? I guess not, given that they're not ruling it out. It means they are able to rule it out, I would guess.
No, well, what he's talking about not ruling out is whether we change the actual geographical time zone that we're on.
Right.
So, you know, the decision to abolish the changing of the clocks would be an EU-wide decision, but what could happen is that Spain decides to take advantage of this change and say, okay, well, now that we're going to get rid of the changing of the clocks, let's go on to the proper time zone. Because Spain at the moment is on the same time zone as Poland, for example.
Right.
If you look on a map and look how much further east Poland is from Spain, it does seem kind of crazy that we're on this we're on this time zone. So it would have cultural change and obviously a change in terms of working hours.
Interesting. Okay, and finally, a Spanish actor facing arrest after ignoring a court summons.
Yeah, now I got a call from the BBC World Service yesterday.
Oh.
And normally when they call me, and I know exactly what story they're going to want to talk about, but I got this call yesterday and I thought, I wonder what on earth they want to talk about, because normally it's this big story. And the producer said, yeah, we want to talk about Willy Toledo. And I thought, really? Because no one really knows who Willy Toledo is.
Okay.
But what happened was, after this news came out yesterday, he started trending worldwide on Twitter, and that's why the BBC were interested in talking about it. And it was quite funny. It's quite a funny story to tell, because it's one of these stories where there's lots of fruity language in it, and I tread very carefully when I talk to you, but I had to tread even more carefully talking to
the BBC.
Yeah, exactly. So Willy Toledo, he's an actor. He's been in an Almodovar film. He was in a great film about Gerald Brennan, the British Hispanist, who's a very interesting character if you've never heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been, you know, he's been in another great film called The Other Side of the Bed, but you know, his work sort of trailed off a bit recently. And he's, I think in Spain, really, he's more known as an activist now, because he's just always getting himself in trouble. He's very anti-establishment. He's very anti the Catholic Church. He's always criticizing the government. He's very sort of, like I said, he's always using very fruity language. He's always saying, you know, pretty outrageous things about religion and the church and so on. He's, for example, he was, you know, he got into this big anti-war protest and on live TV before the Iraq war. He burst into the Spanish Congress with a bunch of other protesters in 2010, I think, shouting slogans in favor of the freedom of Western Sahara. He announced he was going to go and live in Cuba because Cuba is such an amazing place, and he was also praising Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. So he's, you know, he's kind of very left wing and he's very, very critical of Spain. Now, what's happened this time is he's got into trouble with this Spanish Association of Christian Lawyers. They've basically filed a lawsuit against him. Now, the BBC were calling it blasphemy, but we looked into the Spanish Penal Code yesterday, and it's actually not blasphemy. It's offending religious sentiments.
Oh.
It's quite interesting, but there's an article in the Spanish Penal Code that says if you offend someone in terms of their religion and their beliefs, so if you make fun of a religion or the practicing of a religion or so on, it's quite a long clause, you can face a fine that is, has to be paid between 8 and 10 months. So it's not prison time, but you can actually be taken to court for offending someone else's religious sentiment. So again, this brings up this whole issue of freedom of speech in Spain, whether, you know, this kind of thing should still be on the statute book and whether it should be punishable, because we've had a lot of cases of things like this recently where people have made jokes on Twitter. People have, you know, made comments and have ended up in court and talking about things that happened decades ago and getting in trouble with it. So this looks like yet another case. So it basically it dates back to this this kind of satirical religious procession that happened in 2014, where these three women in Seville organized this procession that was in the style of a religious procession, but instead of an icon of a religious icon, they had an icon that was female genitalia, basically, and it had this procession had a rude name,
right.
And they got in trouble with the courts with it via the same association who took it to court on the same thing about offending religious sentiments. And then Willy Toledo made a Facebook post when he said all sorts of fruity things, and he said basically he was saying, I don't care about the saintliness and the virginity of the Virgin Mary. And on that basis, this same group has taken him to court, and Willy Toledo has just completely dismissed this case out of hand, and he's refused to turn up to two court hearings about it. He's just saying, look, I'm just not going to go. So yesterday the judge issued an arrest warrant for this guy, on the basis that he hasn't come into court. So let's see what happens now. Let's see if they do arrest him. He has been arrested before. He issued quite a funny message saying, right, if you want to come and arrest me, you know where you live, because you already sent the lads out to get me. And this was where he got arrested over some alleged criminal damage to a bar during a general strike in Spain. So let's see what happens. Let's see if the police go and arrest him. But he's kind of friends with Javier Bardem. Javier Bardem is also a big into his causes and getting on board with certain charities and NGOs and things like that. But Javier Bardem keeps a bit of a lower profile than Willy Toledo. So
he sounds like quite a character, doesn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's the kind of guy that, you know, if you're sort of left wing, you'll probably have a bit of sympathy for him. But if you're right wing, he's just another one of these people that people go, oh, God, him again. but it all feeds into this whole sort of issue about freedom of speech. I really think there's some elements of the Spanish criminal code that need a bit of an update to bring them into the 21st century, because it does seem bizarre that we don't have freedom of speech in Spain at the moment, and you cannot say certain things. You know, at the moment we've got, you know, a rapper who has had to flee to Belgium because he's going to be sent to prison for the content of his lyrics. I mean, he said some pretty unpleasant things about the civil guard, but, you know, having said that, what kind of a country do we want to be living in if you can't say things about the Virgin Mary, and express your opinion about the royal family? It does seem a bit anachronistic, some of these laws.
Very, very interesting, as always. Thank you, sir. We can find more on that and other information in your splendid newspaper by just Googling El País in English, basically.
Exactly, yeah, and you can find us on the social networks too.
Fantastic, Simon. Speak to you next week. All the best.
Thanks.
Cheers, Em. Bye-bye. Cheers.